Welcome to the Urban Engine Podcast, propelling ideas forward.
Hey guys, welcome to episode number 13 of the Urban Engine Podcast. I'm Matt McClellan. I'm here with Tony Eberhardt and Brandon Cruz. Whoop, whoop.
Hey, what's up?
So we've got something really interesting that we want to talk about today. And that's if you're getting into, and this doesn't have to be a business really, this can just be your career even.
Yeah.
But really focusing on like starting with, you know, the end in mind. Like what does that look like for you? Knowing where you're going with it, I think is the
setting an intention almost.
Yeah.
That's good.
You know, Tony brought this topic up to me the other day and I wasn't a huge fan of it, primarily because I'm not a big planner. And so honestly, it just kind of rubbed me the wrong way because it's something I don't do well.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, I thought about it and it's not just about the exit strategy, even though it has the word end in it, right?
Mm-hmm.
It really has to do with where you're headed. And so whether that's you want to build this business to this, you know, dollar level, you want to, you know, sell your business in so many years, or just, you know, for me, it was more about like, why I want to be able to help the most people. And so building this business has put me in a position to help more people,
mm-hmm.
and to be able to do that more financially, but, you know, also to employ people too, and, you know, hopefully be a reasonably decent employer. You know, those are things that I really wanted from the get-go and didn't know what they looked like back then, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so now here, 9 years later, I'm really able to experience and see some of these things and go, okay, yeah, that is helping. Like that was my goal.
So question for you, Matt, when you started Absolute Nutrition, did you have an end in mind? Like, did you set an intention? Did you know how you wanted to build it? Or were you just like, I'm just going to start this business and see how it goes?
A little of both. Like, some of it was like, I'm just going to start this thing and see how it goes. And the other part of me was like, I'm going to take over GNC.
Yeah.
You know, and just like grow massively. And then I think once I got several years into multiple locations, I was like, I don't know if I want to do that anymore.
Right.
You know?
Yeah. It can change. So that's a
good
point
too.
But was it the same with Apparel Lab? Like when you started that, or did you have more of a deliberate approach?
Well, so that was kind of an accident at the beginning, but it did have more of an altruistic approach of that I wanted to help more business owners that needed shirts, always wanted them last minute because I'm that guy. And then also had things where like, you know, where they maybe needed like a couple more in this size because they ran out, you know. And so that fit well with kind of my initial business model for Apparel Lab. But, you know, the cool thing I was thinking about, though, when we started talking about this the other day is that I've been able to help a lot more people in my first year and a half in Apparel Lab than I was in the first 6 years with Absolute. You know, I have helped more charitable organizations, donated more money off the get-go because I'm in a position to do that now. You know, and I think that that's one of those things that's been really rewarding in this business is to grow it and do those things.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, Brandon mentioned in the last episode, but, you know, I don't do those things in order to then people see that and gain a customer. But, like, the other day I did make a donation and then immediately the person that I donated to turned around and handed me a sale for way more than what I donated.
Oh, that's awesome.
You know, and so that was a cool happenstance. Like, that's not why I do it. I do it because I want to make the impact and because I care.
Yeah.
But it's not a bad thing either, right? But that's been the really interesting thing about growing this business now is, like, I still have that same why. Like, I want to help more people.
Mm-hmm.
And so I don't think that's ever fully defined.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't really plan. I'm a lot like Matt, and I don't plan stuff. I do still try to get in a much better habit of planning on a day, but I do think that like long, mid, and short-term goals are really important. And it's just because it goes back to the same principle of being proactive about controlling your life, company, day, whatever, and being reactive to just whatever's changing. And you can always be reactive, no matter what size your business is. If it's just you or you have 1,000 employees, there's always stuff to do, but really prioritizing that of what's going to make the most impact will help you get to what that goal is.
Mm-hmm.
And that goal might be an end game. Like for me, I never had the goal of selling Dialmax. It just happened because we got to a certain point and someone was interested in us. And I think that setting those goals are so incredibly valuable, but you want to be careful to not set something with the wrong intention.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why I love that you said intent, I think.
Mm-hmm.
So what was your intent originally with Dialmax?
It was to build a product that could help people scale their phone systems, because I ran into so many people that were running into this huge problem when they hit like 100 phones, where just the current technology out there wasn't possible, and the people that did have the technology were charging tons and tons of money. So it wasn't even like necessarily a cash grab in the beginning. It was like, man, there's this such a cool problem that I'm interested in, which mm-hmm. is scale, mm-hmm. That I think I can help these people fix. Mm-hmm. And it was extremely rewarding. Mm-hmm. And the goal there was to be able to work with my friends every day. And that, mm-hmm. that goal has changed, even though that is important. Work with my friends every day and build a product that people really love. And since I had that kind of higher end goal, and not even a time scale, but let's just say like a 5-year thing, then it made it easier for me to set the mid levels of like, what do I need to do to get there? And also the daily goals of what's possible. Mm-hmm. 'Cause I think that overall, this is like one of my favorite quotes, that people underestimate what they can do in a day. Sorry. People overestimate what they can do in a day, but they underestimate what you can do in a year.
I love
right?
that. Mm-hmm.
And it's so true, right? It's because being really proactive about stuff and having that goal for me is like charting it. Because if you're not measuring progress towards that goal, if you're not measuring at all, then you cannot improve it, mm-hmm. right? Just like, you know, a small thing we measure is like trial success ratio. Like how many, if 10 people come in to our trial, how many people stay? And that's like a metric for somebody at Comet Sold. But there's metrics you can use for your whole life. And it can't, I think a good one is not necessarily just cash in the bank, because that's not a indicator of how well you're doing or how well the business is doing. But it might be like revenue and sales, mm-hmm. right? Like I want to get to this point, and then tracking it is, there's something very powerful about being able to track that and see it go up towards your goal, mm-hmm. instead of not looking at it at all, because you just won't focus on it and you won't put priorities around that goal. And that's why I think it's really important to do that regardless of what your end game is.
Yeah. So what are your thoughts then? I mean, you are a software startup right now. And I think a lot of startups right now, maybe not necessarily many here in Huntsville right now today, we're working on that, Urban Engine is working on this, mm-hmm, but mm-hmm. are in a position where they've got investors and they're trying to do the high growth, high scale,
yeah.
make a ton of money and exit and everybody gets rich type thing. So how do you prepare for something like that? And Matt, this is really where my thoughts come from. There's such a difference in setting up like a small business with like a brick and mortar, and you're thinking, you know, I think about like my family's landscaping company, right? Like it's already been through two generations. It's getting ready for the third.
That's awesome.
So much different than like these folks that are like, I'm going to apply for an accelerator program yeah. in California.
I'll tell you what the big thing is for me, which I think is fascinating, is that my business is much more at risk of not being here in 5 years than the landscaping business. If you have a landscaping business and you're a good operator, there will always be work for you because there is grass landscaping all around the world, mm-hmm, right? Mm-hmm. But I know that I have a very short window of opportunity to kind of exploit what's happening in the market, mm-hmm. and that I really 100% truly believe that that potential for exploitation will not be there in 2 to 3 years.
Yeah.
And so that really forces you like, okay, you gotta move. The only option is either knowing that you're gonna die a slow, painful death in 2 years, mm-hmm. or try to get to the point to where you can't be killed as easily. Mm-hmm. And I'll be honest, that is not fun at all. You know, so I think a lot of times we're drawn into that, like raising capital. First of all, like raising capital most of the time is the last thing in the step of the puzzle. Comet Sold hasn't raised money. We will only when we have an incredibly repeatable way to acquire customers, and we can show that that cost is substantially lower than how much that customer is going to pay us over the course of
yeah.
a few years, right? Mm-hmm. And so that's like, people think you don't raise the money to figure it out.
Right.
You raise the money after you figured it out.
Yeah.
But in my opinion, figuring out's the most fun.
Mm-hmm.
But it has forced us into a position where we will not have longevity. The chance of Comet Sold being a company in 10 years from now mm-hmm. is really low.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like important to have that, I think, internal reflection to say that you have an opportunity, a small opportunity or a short window to try to grow or run a business that is more like a brick and mortar or a landscaping company or a restaurant.
Mm-hmm.
And I actually love those businesses a lot. It's just that there's not as much investment capital for them, just because, you know, venture capitalists say, okay, Brandon, here's a dollar. Now your job's to put it into the money printing machine and give me $4
mm-hmm.
in 2 years. And I've analyzed everything to where I feel like that's a good risk for me to take, mm-hmm. right? And at that point in time, you got it figured out. Raising money to open a restaurant or to expand a restaurant is tough. But at the same time, you probably have much more longevity if you do it correctly.
Mm-hmm,
and mm-hmm. I think it goes back to the goal thing of, I hate that we're kind of in an environment where we downplay, potentially, or look down on non-tech or non-scale companies. When in reality, those they do have the opportunity to bring a you know, a very high multiple in a short period of time, but it's really not where the majority of the workforce lives. Right,
right.
And so in terms of contributing to the city and growth long term, it's those, it's the landscaping company, it's the restaurant that can make consistent, you know, 8 to 12% growth every single year.
Yeah.
That is incredibly impressive to me because it takes a level of operational efficiency that I don't have.
Well, and so it's, it's interesting because that's just a different mindset. But at the same time, you know, I do see that short window of time that you discussed there, but I also see that, you know, I think that you, a lot of companies reinvent themselves, right? Like they just become different over time.
That's true. And I think we will, but every time that happens, there's a massive risk that is unparalleled in other markets, right? If we're going to eventually in a year, so if any of our competitors are listening, here's a tidbit, we'll be primarily an app driven company in a year. You know, we've already got 100 apps in the app store and it's kind of growing pretty crazy. But that transition is risky, right? It's not really our fundamental core business. It's not the original business. So the market that we're kind of jumping towards and pivoting towards, we're jumping and we're hoping that we're going to land on solid ground, but we don't know.
Yeah.
You know, I personally love it, but it is a ton of risk. And I love being able to play in that field and transition. But even reading through like this book, Grit, right now, which I'd highly recommend, it's really about that consistent perseverance. That's also why the three generation landscaping thing is so impressive to me, because it's so easy to get excited about something for a month, even for a year. But like, talk to me when you've been doing it for 3 to 4 years. And that's incredibly impressive. Even raising money, right? People are like, I've been talking to investors for 4 months. I'm like, you just started. You know, like, how many times have you been rejected? Oh, 20. Well, that's not even a lot. Like, talk to me when you get to 100. And it's not an elitist thing. It's very much a, you don't see how it really is on the inner circle, like the inner sphere of how capital is actually raised. There are 99, literally 99 no's to get the one yes. Even when we were talking about Andreessen Horowitz investing in Uber, right? Like Uber had went to all these different firms and gotten, I think it was 49 no's, you know, before they said yes. Uber, right? And like, you're probably not Uber. So it's okay to go through that rejection. And I think people that have that perseverance, I am like incredibly attracted to, because I feel like it is a really rare quality.
Yeah.
And it's not something that you're necessarily born with. It's something that's built.
Right.
You know, so
that's what we were talking about, the power of perseverance too. Like, just people like don't seem to realize, like, entrepreneurship, anytime you see someone that is highly successful, it's not an overnight thing. Like, it's not just the social media post where someone makes $10 million overnight. It's years and years and years, probably tons of failures, countless no's, and they still wake up the next day and they're like, oh, let's try it again.
Yeah.
You know, tonight, today might be the yes. That.
But even the large ones, I read a pretty cool article on the CEO of Thumbtap Tech, which is growing like crazy. And he had talked about his last five companies that had like massively blown up and failed. And like that is more fascinating to me than the success, right?
Because
just like you learn a lot more from the dissatisfied customers, you learn way more from the companies that don't immediately have that traction. What's also interesting, and I think I'm running into this with Common Sold now, it really helps give you a new perspective when things are going well to know that it's not normal, right? Like maybe, like just maybe we definitely have problem solution fit. Maybe we have some product market fit. So that tells me I need to set aside everything else and put massive fuel on this fire.
Yeah.
Because there is a unique opportunity that I know, having been through 9 other companies in my life, that this one has the potential. And I only know that because it's been around for a year. And I'm like, okay, this might actually really have the legs to run. Right. I didn't know that in the beginning. You know, and I think people trying to forecast that in the beginning. And that's why I hate when the first action is to raise money. It's just the wrong thing in most businesses.
But it happens a lot. I think it's going to die a little bit.
It's the perseverance, right? Like people that are really perseverant will either continue to try to raise cash until they do, or they will do it without money.
Yeah.
And I respect that so much because I know how hard it is.
But man, that end goal, you know, I was looking at some statistics the other day of someone talking about softball players. You know, they're like, of this many softball players, so many will have the opportunity to go to a, you know, SEC school. They're only going to take X amount of players from this area. And it was really the number, like 13.
Yeah.
You know, and they're like, so all these girls right here, very few of you are even going to have the chance to try to make it. And they're like, out of that, then there's a lot of junior colleges where you can go play some ball, maybe. then out of all those players, the ones that go to the next level are another fewer subset. And you think about the same thing, though, in the investment world. Like, these people that are starting out and like, I'm going to exit for this, you know, this amount. They've got that thing set in their mind. Very few people make it to that finish line.
Yeah.
Like, it just exponentially decreases over time. So there's got to be a lot of failed players. One of those failed players may be you. So, I mean, that is an interesting perspective, too, to, like, really consider yourself that cream of the crop that's going to make that big exit that so few companies really have.
Yeah.
I mean, like, we live in an age right now where it's almost a joke how many are exiting right now, right? But it's also great for a lot of good companies. Like, you know, companies out of Birmingham like Shipt that got purchased by Target. Like, that's fantastic.
I was actually going to mention that because I think it's interesting. People are like, man, he just started and just raised money.
No way.
It's crazy. It's like he had... I'm pretty sure this is public, but he had like a $25 million exit of his previous company, right? So he like just called up his friends that invested with him the first time or people that had saw that success. And now I view it as much more responsibility for me, like, 'cause I only want to go raise money when I know I can deploy it efficiently. And he thought the same thing, right? But he already had the previous win. I think the coolest example is, think about like the Olympian swimmer, like Michael Phelps, right? It's because that's the only Olympian swimmer I can name, which is bad from me. But
it's fine.
People look at him and be like, oh, he's so natural and talented.
Oh, my God.
And he's just lucky, you know? And it's like, it's so easy for people. And I like using the Olympic example because it's such extreme edge of athletic capability. And they don't know it. So it's easy for us to cop out of like, yes, there are physical traits and anatomy and hereditary things that play into him, but there are literally tens of thousands of people that have that same kind of physical anatomy that never get to that point,
right?
Because it is the grit, right? Mm-hmm. It is the perseverance. And it's easy for us as individuals to say, I don't even look at him like I could potentially do that, because it's easy for me to say he's just lucky, and then I don't have to compare myself. And I think startups are the same way.
Yeah, but sorry, I have to say this.
Yeah.
So when you look, for me, when I look at Michael Phelps, all I can think about is like every day for his entire life that he woke up at 4 o'clock in the morning, got in the pool, didn't matter how cold or hot it was outside, and he just swam his ass off. And then he had somebody screaming at him the other 11 hours, 12 hours of the day that he was awake about what he needed to eat, how else he needed to train, what he needed to be thinking about. Screw school, you're swimming.
Yep.
So I think about it as, damn, if I had somebody on like that, I mean, I might have been able to do some cool stuff too. Probably not
right
Michael Phelps, but yeah, that's how I would say listeners need to be thinking about it.
And like the startup's the same way. I think that Michael Phelps' training regimen and the fact that he eats 10,000 calories a day, which Matt is like just ridiculous amount of
ridiculous
food. I mean, insane, is it's been highlighted, right? Because people want to know like where this guy came from. For some reason, we don't do this with businesses and entrepreneurs, right? Where I would love to just like just follow me around for a day and just see like, and it's almost like if I went to work out with Matt, and you guys can't see, but I'm not ripped and Matt is, like, that's just the easiest way to really phrase it. I could go into more detail, but I'll spare you. If I was to go work out with Matt immediately, like, and I was to follow his regimen, immediately I would like way underperform. I wouldn't be able to do it. My body would give out because I don't have that training. And I think it's the same way in business. It's not even that Matt has necessarily had some expert training, but he's been persistent, right? So if a lot of people, I think, were to come join me on a daily, just normal day for me, would be like, this is just a lot of time that you spend doing these things, and a lot of time you spend doing stuff that you don't necessarily like. It's like the Michael Phelps or Matt McClellan version of the business, right? And people don't, and I like that we're starting to highlight that more and more, because then you don't put yourself on the pedestal and say like, oh, Bill Smith sold Shipt for $550 million. Like, he's just lucky. Absolutely an element to luck, you know, with Target acquiring them, but you also didn't get to that revenue point and that size of the business necessarily all with luck. But it's so easy for us to distill it down, because then we don't compare ourselves, right? And I think that we could really do a good job of doing that on the business side, to say like, okay, this is what he actually went through. Okay, it's actually a 5-year-old company, right? It was not an overnight success. As someone said, if it was an overnight success, it was the longest night of my life, right? And I think that is important to keep in mind, that a lot of these people, there's always an element of luck. You can just statistically throw that out, but the people that really put in the time that are persistent always seem to be more lucky.
Right.
But what's even crazier about that, you know, that's a really great perspective, Brandon, but I think even like in the Michael Phelps scenario, even if I were to try to eat 10,000 calories a day and train like him, it's just not going to happen for me.
Yeah.
Like, I'm not built like him. I don't have the same mindset of him. I don't have the same passion as him. Like,
yeah,
there's
definitely
so many additional factors that come. Like, what you named is huge, but all the other factors that come with it too, like, nobody quantifies any of these and really takes a look, a hard look at themselves and what they're doing.
Well, because that's hard. You're exactly, it's a hard look, right? It's uncomfortable
yeah.
to look at yourself and be like, this is why I'm failing. And it's uncomfortable to say, like, maybe I don't have the passion I thought, right? Or maybe I actually don't have the persistence that I thought. You know, Will Smith said this, really, I think is so cool, that he's like, I'm not the most talented. I'm not the best looking, you know, I'm not the most gifted, but if you and me both get on a treadmill, have you guys heard this?
Oh, I love
no.
that.
Yeah.
If you and me both get on a treadmill, two things will happen. Either I will win or I will die. Right. Yeah. Which I think is so
either
cool.
Either you're getting off first or I'm going to die. That's it.
Which I think is absolutely wild. Like, to have that kind of self-awareness, but also that persistence. There was an interesting study done as well of people that just got on an incline, a farthest incline, highest speed treadmill, of who would last the longest. And it was not the people. There was obviously a curve for the shape that people were in, but people that were on the exact same athletic caliber did not have any correlating times at all.
Mm-hmm.
So it really can measure, like, what your individual willpower is to go when everything else is telling you not to.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's, like, a direct indicator for success as an entrepreneur, just because there will be so many times when everything's telling you not to, but you still have to go and wake up and do it again.
Mm-hmm.
And knowing how low things can get, it really helps you celebrate things when they're good.
Right.
You know, it just, again, gives you that perception.
So I will shift the conversation just a little bit. Matt made a great point earlier before we sat down for today's podcast that most likely not all of our listeners are those that have already taken the jump into entrepreneurship or maybe don't even have a desire to ever do so. How did you describe those people?
You know, those are the go-getters. Those are the sales
right.
guys that wake up in the morning and try to get themselves motivated because they have goals to hit, or they want to, you know, step up to the next level. Or they're the people that are just like, maybe they've got a side gig, you know, maybe they're just, they want to be the best leader they can be too, for their organization.
Or they're, you know, the second person at a company or something like that.
They're the go-getters. They're the ones that hit it hard. You know, I think that's what we're really.
I was going to say, in any role that you're in, completely take out entrepreneurship. And like, that in the Michael Phelps example, right? Like, that's not an entrepreneur, and it's a phenomenal example of persistence and training and mastery. And I think that as individuals, as humans, all of us want to be good at either what we're passionate about or what we're working on.
Yeah.
So if you are that sales individual in an organization, be like the best damn sales individual ever. And I know it's cliche to say be the best you can be. It's not about just being the best you can be. It's about mastery.
Yeah.
Right? Being that 10,000 hour rule, that expert in your craft, is so incredibly fulfilling that a lot of times that's the underlying, you know, gas in the gas tank for a lot of people when they want to say no, is having that true mastery compared to everybody else. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Everybody wants to.
You know, when you talk about mastery and the hours into it, the other day I just started working up some random numbers on like how many hours I've probably put in the last 9 years since I started this thing.
Nice.
And it's like 30,000 hours.
Jeez, that's awesome.
It's literally close to 30,000 hours that I've been doing this.
And you have an unparalleled expertise in the space.
But I mean, it's because of those hours, right?
Exactly.
Like 5,000 hours in, I wasn't as good.
Right,
know?
Yes.
Even at 20,000, like there's still so many things I've learned in the last 8 to 10 that have really made a difference in who I am and how I operate. You know, that when you think about that, that's what's crazy. But it's like you said, it is about the mastery. It is about the time that you put in on that repeat over and over and over.
Mm-hmm.
And also about the effort that you use to improve. And like listening to things like this are such a great tool to either give you the perspective to want to improve or to give you some of the tools and things that we've used over time to help improve, you know, or the lessons we've learned to then level up your game. Because that's part of mastery as well.
Mm-hmm. You're right.
I would say, this is the last thing I'll say, is that one of my favorite quotes is that everybody is an entrepreneur. If you work for someone, you have one customer. It's your employer. So, you know, for those that are listening and hearing us talk a lot about entrepreneurship and having to run a business and set these goals for exit strategy, if you're in a position right now where you only have one customer, your boss, you need to be thinking about what you are there to contribute and how you can master and add value. And if you're in the position where you're looking to maybe move or transition into something new, or you want to innovate or create something new, it's about identifying ahead of time what you want that contribution to accomplish. So maybe you want to introduce a new CRM system that's going to contribute to sales and growth sales, or Maybe you want to build a new website so that it's SEO optimized. And then once you accomplish that, you can move on. But whatever that task is or what that thing is you want to master and do really well, if you're in a position to right now identify it, it will lead to your overall happiness in that position and will keep you passionate throughout. I found that to be true in my life. And if you set those goals and you meet them over time, you're probably going to be happier. So I think that's a wrap on today's podcast. I want to thank everybody for listening in. I also want to thank our sponsors. Apparel Lab and Sharp Communication are awesome to us. We couldn't do it without our sponsors. If you're in the Huntsville area, would love for you to join us at an Urban Engine event in real life. You can find us on social media. UrbanEngine.org is the website. And if you want to hear us talk about something on the podcast, just drop us a line, podcast@UrbanEngine.org. We'll see you guys next time.
And I do want to toss back out there one more time. If you would go find the review section on either Anchor, iTunes, Spotify. I mean, I really want to know how we're doing here. Like, yeah. You know, we're still pretty new. We're still only 13 episodes in here, but I want to know listener feedback. Like, if you've listened to us, if you like what we're saying, if you don't like what we're saying, if you have opinions on what we're saying, leave us a review on any one of those mediums and let us know.
Yeah, that'd be awesome.
Yep. Thanks, guys.
Thanks.